All right, Cinco de Mayo. We're live from the ballpark, Warner Park. It is day two of the minor league season after being delayed. The Storm Chasers opened up last night with a victory over the St. Paul Saints, who are the AAA affiliate of the Minnesota Twins. And today, I believe, if I'm seeing the scoreboard correctly, they're behind 4-2 in the third inning. So it's great to have baseball back. Good crowd in here. We're in the Stormfront, the team store. Thanks, everybody, that has stopped by. We are, unfortunately, we're out of tickets, but we still got koozies. We got bottle openers that do not come with the beer, but this would be a great giveaway on Thirsty Thursday. We got mouse pads, and we got a T-shirt. And we've got stuff on the rack that if you would like a One Means All Union Omaha shirt, we might be able to work a deal.
Oh, okay.
You didn't hear me say that. Sorry. That guy runs the place. He just gave me this dirty look. Just joking. It's radio. We're just having fun. All right. We're about to be escorted out of here. George, you might have to clean up the rest of the show.
Man.
So, we, you know, in this town, we get sentimental for things. Some people may be sentimental for the Civic Auditorium. Some may say, man, what a dump. The place smelled. It was bad. I'd go to Creighton games, and I'd be able to sit behind a Creighton bench, and Rick Johnson was the head coach, and I'd line up my beers. I mean, look, I have memories of Civic Auditorium, whether a sporting event or, you know, a concert you went to or anything else in that building held a circus, which, you know, the smell lingered for years and years and years. But it was the Civic Auditorium. It was different. It had a smell to it. You know, smoke hung in the air. It's still, I think of the three venues that Omaha Hockey has played in, it was the best venue. It was a great home ice advantage when Omaha Hockey began and they played at the Civic Auditorium. But as we know now, that does not exist. It's still, you drive by and it's just an empty lot where the Civic Auditorium used to be. And then yesterday, the mayor announced the new development that is planned for that area. It has been talked about for a long time. You know, just kind of like how Crossroads was talked about. They were going to develop and going to develop and things fell through. And the next thing you know, Crossroads outside of Target is essentially gone. And they've started development there. Well, now they're going to start development on where the Civic Auditorium used to be. Don't you think that they, because of how much history was in that building, they have to have a like a plaque or something, right, in one of the businesses? Like they or find, as we discussed a couple of years ago, pieces of the old floor. Don't they have to have something in that development that tells people this is where the Civic Auditorium used to be? Civic Auditorium holds a place in this town. I mean, we at the zoo, we at least have a little bit of Rosenblatt Stadium that is preserved. You know, you got the foul poles and you got the wiffle ball field. I think you got to have something about the Civic Auditorium when you open up this development that's going to have housing and some businesses. I mean, it looks really fancy. I was impressed by the renderings. It's going to be nice for that area of downtown. But they gotta have, like a plaque or something. Heck, you go to Mall of America, they have the seat where Harmon Killebrew hit his famous home run off of. They've got that up on the wall by, I think it's still called Camp Snoopy, the amusement park in Mall of America.
Oh wow!
You go to in Pittsburgh, not Crosley Field because that's Cincinnati. I'm drawing a blank on the old field of Pittsburgh, but it's on where the Pittsburgh campus is, and they actually have part of the outfield wall that is still up in this park on the Pittsburgh campus, and it tells the history of the field, and I completely blanked on the old Pittsburgh Pirates Stadium before they moved into Three Rivers and then now where they are at PNC Park. A lot of these former, you go to Ebbets Field in that neighborhood, it's got a, I think home plate is still there, like right on the street, like on the street corner of it signifies that Ebbets Field was here. I hope they find a way to do something for the Civic Auditorium. Let people know. I mean, it holds a significant place in terms of a sporting venue in this town. But kudos to the developers and the city. The plans look really, really nice. And I hope it is beneficial for that part of town.
Were you talking about Forbes Field?
Forbes Field, there you go.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a park. Right near the campus, or kind of on the campus at Pittsburgh, is they've got the outfield wall. I mean, it is the outfield wall where it used to stand, and they've got a whole history of Pittsburgh Pirate baseball history. You know, I mean, there's some, before they moved into Three Rivers Stadium, and We Are Family in 79, they had incredible history, and they've got They've got monuments up, and they've got kind of a timeline and tell the story, and it all is around the original outfield wall.
Well, that is pretty cool. That is cool.
I mean, I don't think we'll ever, they'll never, you know, there'll always be something that tells people that Rosenblatt Stadium used to be here. This is what Rosenblatt Stadium was. Right. And they're, you know, they're still playing. You got to get the foul poles. You've got the big sign as you're driving on I-80 and you look up. That's the back of the, you know, that's where the scoreboard was. You know, so they've got that display. I hope somebody from the city says, hey, we want to do a plaque on the Civic Auditorium. What would be even better is if they could get a hold of, and people around town have pieces of the floor, if they would put, like, in one of the businesses or, you know, like on the entrance, like the floor to the old Civic Auditorium, just to mark that it was here. So, thank you for everybody about Forbes Field. I can't believe I blanked. It was a unique ballpark. But yeah. I'm into history. I like that kind of stuff. I think keep those memories alive of old ballparks to tell the story. Because I didn't know the first time I was in Pittsburgh and I was on the campus. I've been to Pittsburgh many times, but I'd never been to walk around the campus. I didn't know that Forbes Field was right there. Mm-hmm. And they have a great setup that it also shows you like where it is. Like I can't go here's the other thing, and we've gotten off on this, but I live in Exarvin Village, so I you know the track is there. There is outside of at Stinson Park. Where they have a little bit of a monument, there are, like, no pictures of how large that whole area was with the track and the Coliseum and the barns and everything else. Mm-hmm. There is no picture in that neighborhood that shows you, like, in comparison, hey, we're sitting in this restaurant. Oh, I'm on the backstretch. Or, 'cause people will ask, well, where do you live? Like, are you where the barns were? Are you where the Coliseum was? I don't know. That's just a good piece of property because you have Peony Park. I don't think I can go to that Walmart on 72nd and there's something in there that says, "Hey, this is where Peony Park used to be."
Wow, yeah, that's a good point.
So I mean, you know, if they want me to do it, I'll take the lead to design something for Civic Auditorium.
Why not?
Well, you can't ignore it. I mean, it's a huge part of the sports and entertainment industry.
Absolutely.
In Omaha, Nebraska. I mean, there's so much different things happen there. Whether you thought the place was a or not, there were a lot of special events that happened there. I mean, there's a lot of memories that were happening there, and you have people that come along, and they'll go, well, what used to be here? Some arena and some music hall. No. I mean, it's something pretty pretty darn famous. All right. Sorry about that.
All good. No, I love that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I saw the plans yesterday. I'm really excited for everybody that is involved in that project because there have been multiple attempts to build something there that benefits the community, and I think this will be a plan that will definitely benefit a lot of people in our community. All right, I asked earlier in the show, and we've kind of dropped it in and out today, the offensive line. And we focused on the draft and how the draft can magnify where your program is. Next year is if you're looking at this current staff and the NFL, next year and beyond is kind of when you start to gauge, are they recruiting and signing NFL-caliber players? They get them in the program, they coach them up, they develop them, they process them, they move them on to the NFL. Because Hymus and Farniok were not recruited by this staff. Now, they were developed by this staff, but if you want a true gauge on how the NFL draft magnifies where your program is, and especially with the current regime, it's kind of the start of next year. Even though this was supposed to be the Adrian Martinez draft. But let's look at next year and guys that would be available to be drafted, like a Cam Taylor-Britt, like an Austin Allen, who knows, even an Adrian Martinez, how they move through this year and where they are in the draft. And then I think we can start to get a sense of, okay, where this staff is, the talent they've evaluated, and how they turn out. Because the draft doesn't lie. It magnifies where you are as a program. First and foremost, if you're winning, what kind of players you're developing, and what kind of development you have. It can go both ways. Because, for example, look at Michigan. Michigan in the last 2 years has 18 NFL draft picks. They have 11 wins. What does that tell you? I posed the question to Scott Chandler, and I agree with what he said, and if you didn't hear it, he basically said, well, that tells me a couple of different things here, what we have going on. One, they're able to recruit. They're able to get players in the program and keep them at the level of where they were then when they recruited them. You know, 4 stars, some 5 stars. So they get them and they keep them. And the NFL will go anywhere to find you. I mean, you can't hide from the NFL. If you are talented, it doesn't matter. Whatever Deion Sanders says about HBCU's players not getting drafted, if you're good, the NFL is going to find you. Heck, they rent rooms in Fargo because they know that North Dakota State is producing NFL talent. They'll go anywhere, they'll find you. It says in Michigan, okay, we have good talent here. We have NFL talent that was recruited highly, was kept at that level. But what's going on in the development on the field to win? What's the difference? They're good players. Is something wrong with your culture? Is something wrong with your discipline? Why does Michigan have 18 players drafted in the last 2 years, but only 11 wins? Well, the NFL draft magnifies it, and it doesn't lie. It lets you know if you're able to evaluate and sign NFL-caliber players. And in Nebraska's case, offensive linemen this year were 2 that were selected. Nebraska hasn't had an All-American on the offensive line since 2001. What kind of offensive line does Nebraska have currently? And I think about guys after the game on Saturday, and this is you're going to look at the offensive line at Nebraska this year, and you're going to go, wow, that's a young line. Let's don't kid ourselves. There's some guys that have been here for a while that have played a lot of football. And if you're a one-year starter, you've played a lot of snaps of football. And Nebraska's going to have a second-year starter at one of the tackle spots. They're going to have a guy that has played at least one start, that being in the Rutgers game. They're now going to be on the third year of their center. And they're going to have some guards that are a little bit more experienced. Grade-wise, young, but in terms of experience, they're a little bit older. And it's going to be an interesting year in college football because there are 46 of the 131 Division I offensive lines are returning all 5 starters. Think about that for a moment. 46 football programs are returning all 5 starters this year. Nebraska essentially is returning 4 starters. I'm going to say Corcoran, even though he only started 1 game, is a starter. But I listened to the offensive line guys, and, you know, are they going to be better as a 5-some, 6-some, 7-some, 8-some than they were last year? They have to be. There's no excuses. But they also need a little bit of help, whether it be play calling, running backs that read the blocks correctly. Everything has to come together. This is not an offensive line that has erasers that they will just maul people and they can take care of running backs that run to the wrong hole or quarterbacks that make the wrong read or wide receivers that run the wrong route. And it doesn't matter because the offensive line is so good. Nebraska doesn't have that kind of an offensive line. They don't have erasers that take care of mistakes. I mean, we got spoiled with Amir Abdullah running out of the backfield where he was an eraser and he took care of a lot of mistakes that you had on different position groups on the offensive side of the football. But you listen to the offensive guys, they want to be the team. They want to be the identity. If you think about what the identity of a football team should be, your eyes are going to go immediately to a quarterback, either for the good or the bad. Let's use the 90s. The quarterback position had a lot of traits that carried over. Strong mentally, weren't necessarily the best player on the team. They had great leadership. And they had a ton of respect, whether it be the coaches or their teammates. But the quarterback, back in the 90s, I don't think was the identity of the football program. It was the offensive line. The offensive line was big, they were strong, they worked together as a unit, they were consistent, and they were reliable. And they were dominating. So all of those, what was those teams back in the 90s? The position group that kind of mirrors right now where Nebraska is, the offensive linemen want to be the identity. They want to be run the damn ball people. They want the identity of a downhill running group that is physical, that is going to maul you, and that's going to lead to the identity and the vibe of this football program. But right now, the stark reality is, what position group mirrors where this program is, the good, the bad, the inconsistent, love you, hate you, it's quarterback. And it's one quarterback in particular because he's the guy that's still around 3 years later. You get the good, you get the bad, you get the inconsistent, and you get the what if this happened? Why doesn't this happen? That's the identity. Can Nebraska make the transition to your identity as an offensive line group that is consistent, that is physical, that is dominating? If that happens, then the conversation about what is to unfold this year and down the road changes. But I don't know if, I'm not saying that's not possible, I don't know if that's where it's going to be directed towards. This may be a thing where Scott, in his idea and his offense and the fact that he is a former quarterback, has built the identity of this football program on the quarterback. And it's the good, it's the bad, it's the roller coaster, it's the wow plays, it's the uh-oh plays, that the identity of Nebraska football will not change, and it'll always be on the quarterback instead of where it could be on the offensive or defensive line. Now, I could be wrong if you think about why were they so physical this year in practice during the spring. But that's going to be a while to change the opinion that this program is built around the quarterback. And as the quarterback goes, this program goes. You live and die with the quarterback. If the quarterback is great, then the program is great. If the quarterback is bad or the quarterback is not great, he's just good, then that's what you get. But there's guys that play on the offensive line. I get the vibe from them. They want to change that. But will they be allowed to change it? All right, 23 past the hour. Parker Gabriel will join us here in a little bit. George's got his NBA minute as well, as we are closing in on the end of the regular season. Be kind to George, people. I know you're getting after him about the Aaron Rodgers, and it's kind of fun. But then there's the other part of George's fandom, is his first-year basketball coach may be on his way out.
Legitimately.
Yeah. And then, George, answer this question. We didn't get into Russell Westbrook much yesterday because the show just kind of went its different way.
Yeah.
Do triple-doubles matter? Not just a Russell Westbrook triple-double. In NBA basketball, does triple-doubles matter?
No.
I think only in college now do they matter. And when they happen in college, you go, wow.
Bingo. Yep.
We'll discuss coming up next with the NBA Minute. And then Parker Gabriel will join us here in the last half hour as the Gary Sharp Show broadcasts live from Warner Park on 1620 The Zone.